saving money on everything you need at Menards. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements, and it enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 26 colors of Owens Corning Duration shingles and transform your home today. Shop our selection of roofing products on Menards.com. Plus, check out our weekly flyer and find plenty of great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
She was sobbing. She was begging Assistant District Attorney Deborah Vincent not to take the deal. That's what the victim's mother later told reporters in her own words on the record months ago. Months before what just took place in an Oklahoma courtroom happened that we're about to talk about. A mother begging a prosecutor not to hand her teenage daughter's case away. And despite that, despite the pleas, don't hand this away, the prosecutor took the deal anyway. And now 4 months later, a Payne County judge rubber stamped it. The boy her daughter accused of essaying her, of strangling her, literally on camera, until she lost consciousness, then laughing when she came to, walked out of a courtroom without a single day in jail. His name is Jesse Butler. That's what he looks like. Don't forget it if you're in Stillwater and see him at the local Piggly Wiggly. He turns 19 in August, roughly 120 days from now. On that day, under the terms of this deal of the state of Oklahoma that it's accepted over that mother's sobbing objection, the legal record of what happened to her daughter is going to be erased. Like it didn't happen. Every charge, every filing, every affidavit, just gone. Butler will never again have to answer a question about any of it. Not on a job application, not on a background check, not on a date. For anyone who's unfortunate enough to date him, not in a civil lawsuit. A clerk in Payne County is going to close a file on a Tuesday, and the last 18 months of that girl's life are going to stop existing in the eyes of the law. That is the finish line every legal move in this case has been racing towards. And this week, for 3 days, she and her mother sat in a Stillwater courtroom and tried to make somebody slow it down. Let's understand Jesse Butler first. Before the hearing, before the plea, before any of it, a sworn police affidavit describes him as 17, allegedly strangling a 16-year-old girl, his then-girlfriend, until she was unconscious. She said she came to, he was laughing. A medical professional later told her she'd been roughly 30 seconds from dying. Investigators recovered a video from his phone that the affidavit describes as depicting the strangulation, because why not video it? He allegedly violated a protective order on school grounds. The first victim reported repeated assaults to a Stillwater High School assistant principal in September of 24. Surprise, they failed. According to the federal civil lawsuit her parents later filed, no meaningful investigation followed, and the emergency protective order served on Butler weeks later was never entered into the school's internal database. Meaning teachers, coaches, and staff had no idea it existed while he allegedly continued to violate it. That is the person at the center of this story. Not a legal abstraction, a teenager whose alleged conduct put a girl 30 seconds from the end of her life on video, according to court documents. And as we continue to go through this, your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Share this everywhere you can around Stillwater, Oklahoma. If you know anybody there, share it. Everybody should. I mean, everybody, a lot of people do. But, you know, it's good to keep a face like this alive. Keep the memories alive. The magic that is Jesse Butler. In August of 25, he pled no contest to 11 felony counts, attempted first degree R, 2 counts, R by instrumentation, 3 counts, S battery, forcible oral S, strangulation, 2 counts, domestic assault and battery, violation of a protective order. He faced up to 78 years in prison. He received youthful offender status and no prison time. That's how it works in Stillwater. especially if your family's big into sports and you have such amazing life skills as hitting balls with sticks. You know, stuff that really helps you in life. Stuff that really sets you apart as being better than the rest. Smart, intuitive, compassionate, loving, kind, considerate, empathetic. Oh, wait, none of that necessarily correlates to your skills with hitting a ball with a stick. Go team. But in Stillwater, you know, we like to prop people up that are good at putting balls into holes and hitting them with sticks. They're, you know, priorities are right up there with what makes sense to celebrate in youth. So he received youthful offender status, so no prison time, because he's really good at hitting a ball with a stick, in my opinion. Community service, counseling, a curfew, and the countdown to August and a birthday that makes all of it disappear so he can continue going through life hitting a ball with a stick. There are two girls at the center of this. One of them is the daughter of the mother who filed the constitutional challenge. The other girl's mother also took the stand this week, but she couldn't fully testify about what happened to her daughter because her daughter is not part of the active motion. One family hired an attorney, filed a challenge, pushed. The other, as far as the public record shows, did not have the same resources and did not file. The system is about to close around both girls. Regardless, one family fought, the other watched. That's the quiet second horror of this case. Accountability in Oklahoma is apparently something you can pay a lawyer to chase if you can afford it. If you can't, well. And if the clock doesn't run out first. The hearing. That's what took place this week. 3 days. This was in court for 3 days. What does it all mean? Well, let's get into that, because what happened in that courtroom over 3 days is what fury gets built from. And I'm trying to tamper mine down right now. This is actually not the first time I'm recording this piece because let's just say I got a little excited. Started saying things that I said, you know, maybe we don't want that on camera. maybe the calls for what should, you know, happen to somebody like Jesse Butler by the villagers with pitchforks and flames might be a bit much. Maybe I shouldn't put that out there to the world. Just let the world do what it will, right? The victim, represented by attorney Rachel Bassett, filed a constitutional challenge against the Payne County DA's office under Marcy's Law. We've been talking about this. Oklahoma's Victims Rights Amendment. The challenge was never about Butler. Butler's deal actually is untouchable, it turns out. The victims agreed to that going in. What the challenge asked for was a ruling on the record, and the DA failed them. Plus a concrete reform, a mandatory affidavit signed by every victim in future Oklahoma cases confirming their rights had actually been honored, and an apology. That's it. A ruling, a rule change, and the word sorry. It's kind of a take what you can get situation here, because the way the law works, the way it's set up, unless Jesse Butler fails in the next 100 some days, all this will be erased. Now, granted, there's a full summer ahead of us, and people like this don't make great choices. So there is certainly a probability of some sort. I don't know if it's high, I don't know if it's low, that there could be a reoffense of some form or another that could land his ass in prison. All it takes is one. And all it might take is one more person coming forward if there are more people. Just saying. So, in court, this week. Day one. Let's walk through what happened. Before a single witness was sworn in, Bussett tried to temporarily withdraw the motion. Court filings cite the defense's own April 9th filing, which contained allegations of potential destruction or failure to preserve evidence. This is interesting. Bussett wanted to pause and reassess. Now, withdraw makes you think, oh, they're giving up. No, 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 no. What she wanted to do was pause this hearing because of the potential destruction or failure to preserve evidence issue that was discovered by the attorneys for the victims. And possibly bring it back to court later. Well, the DA's office objected. They wanted to push this through, get it on the record, get it done with, don't get more time to gather up information that might make him look worse than he already does. Let's, or us, if we destroyed Evelyn, let's just push this through because we don't want to be all that accountable here. And you already were on the record. So let's keep going, Judge. They wanted this, Judge. Let's do it, Judge. And the judge said, okay, let's do it. Let's stop there. The office accused of failing these girls told the court it would not allow the girl's own attorney to pause her own case. The DA demanded the hearing proceed, demanded a judge make a finding in writing that the DA had complied with the law, because the DA doesn't want to look like they were in the wrong here, because in 4 months, when Butler's record disappears, they wanted a judicial ruling in their favor sitting in the file so that any future lawsuit, any future documentary, any future voter asking questions can be shut down with a judge already ruled we did nothing wrong statement. The judge denied Butler's attorney's request to even participate in the hearing. Butler wasn't at stake, so he stayed home. Then the victim took the stand, 2 hours, in tears. She told Judge Michael Culling that she and the other girl found out Butler was taking a no-contest plea 15 minutes before his plea hearing on August 25th of 2025. 15 minutes! She did not deliver a victim impact statement at the sentencing. 6 words explained why. She wasn't in the right headspace. He did all these horrible things to you. You got 15 minutes to figure out what you want to say in court, because we're going to go down this road. I know it's not the one you wanted or the one we said we would, but good luck. That is what Oklahoma's compliance with Marcy's Law looked like and produced. A teenage girl who had been, according to her own affidavit, 30 seconds from death was given 15 minutes to process the fact that the boy who allegedly put her there was walking out of a courtroom free. Day two of the hearing this week, her mother took the stand. Butler's family sat in the front row of the courtroom while she testified. Parents, a sister, watching her break down in public about what their son's case had done to her daughter. She told the judge the DA's office caused her family more fear than the case itself. She said her daughter's rights were not protected equally to Butler's. She said the whole process has changed her daughter. And the world changed. From a mother about a teenage girl is not a clinical word, changed. It's a hollow word. A mother uses changed when she's describing a child she cannot find anymore. She brought her reform with her, the Lumpkin form, modeled on the document Oklahoma defendants are already required to sign when waiving rights during a plea. Her proposal, in plain language, defendants signed something proving they understood what they were giving up. Why don't victims? Then two witnesses set the state's entire theory on fire. Jessica Goodwin, an attorney for the Iowa Tribe of Oklahoma Victim Services Unit, testified under oath that days before Butler's plea hearing, she did not believe the deal had been finalized and had not seen what the pleadings would look like. A professional victim advocate completely in the dark. Probably by design. Then Bussett took the stand herself, the victim's own lawyer. She testified that she believed the deal was still being negotiated until she physically walked into the courtroom on August 25th, not told what plea, not told what charges, not handed the filings. The state's response? There were no filings to give because the DA's office hadn't created them yet. It's a lot of skirting around logistics in this case, a lot of skirting around moral obligations, ethical obligations, professional obligations, but not necessarily legal obligations. And that's what we see so much of in cases like this. People skirting around the law and violating things that many would look at as, like I said, ethical, moral, just blazing down those roads because turns out, in most cases, there's not a whole lot you can do about someone being morally bankrupt or ethically bankrupt if it's not illegal. We've just lived in a society for a long time where people just kind of followed those social norms and those rules because we chose to do that. We chose to have those sort of things. There's always been people who violated them, and there always will be. It's just it feels like we have a lot more of them, and they're being weaponized for bad people on a more regular basis because our laws aren't built to protect us from ethical and moral failings the way that maybe they should be. And maybe we're discovering when the morally and ethically bankrupt go to cash in on their morally and ethically bankrupt choices. A deal was struck. The plea was days away. The defense knew, the DA knew, nobody else did. Not the mother, not her daughter, not Bussett, not Goodwin. That is not a communication failure. That is a room with two people in it and a wall around them. Butler's defense team inside the wall, the DA's office inside the wall. Every single person who was supposed to be protecting the victims, outside. We got to day three of testimony. We had Deborah Vincent, the DA, the assistant DA, who ran the prosecution from the start on the stand most of the day, and everything collapsed into one Friday phone call. Vincent told the court that she had believed for months that Butler would plead guilty. A week before the hearing, his attorney told her he'd plead no contest instead. The plea that avoids admitting guilt and under youthful offender status erases itself. Vincent said she called the family that Friday, told them to go ahead and do it, and then she'd update them if anything changed more Monday. The family's memory of the same call, they thought Vincent was still considering the deal. They thought negotiations would continue over the weekend. They thought they'd be asked. They found out what was actually happening 15 minutes before the hearing. So is it a misunderstanding? Is it a failure to convey information in a way and confirm that the people you are giving that information to fully, truly understand it? Was there a lot of assuming going on here, which we all know makes an ass out of you and me? What was it? What happened here? Because it feels like there's a lot of failures going on. Vincent was asked under oath whether she failed these girls by assuming they understood the no contest plea was final. Let me name the actors. Butler's defense attorney negotiated a deal that buries the conviction under youthful offender status. The one form of Oklahoma felony resolution that vanishes. The special judge who granted that status, Susan Worthington, has longstanding ties to Oklahoma State University, where Butler's father was formerly director of football operations. Coincidence. She was later cleared of misconduct by the Council on Judicial Complaints. That's interesting. Deborah Vincent made the final call and assumed a family she knew was against the deal would simply accept it. It's a weird way of thinking. You know they're against it, but somehow you think they're going to accept it. Laura Austin Thompson, the elected DA, has publicly defended the outcome, and this week aggressively fought to prevent the victim's challenge from being withdrawn. In closing arguments, her office's position was that the state followed Oklahoma law and is not required to apologize under the Oklahoma Crime Victims Act. Basically, we said it, we can't help it that you didn't understand it, or that your attorney didn't convey it in a way that confirmed to the attorney that you truly did understand it, and it didn't just go, okay, I did my job. Every one of them, through their own choices, moved the ball in the same direction. And what did the victims feel? What did they say? Well, they'll figure it out. They have. Unfortunately, it's too late. Move the ball towards Jesse's birthday. Towards the seal, towards a record so clean it might as well have never existed. And then all this can kind of go away from the books of Stillwater, Oklahoma, and they can move on to celebrating unskilled children who have no other marketable ability than hitting a ball with a stick. The only people pulling the other way were two teenage girls, two mothers, one attorney, one tribal victim services advocate. They lost at every stage. The plea happened, the sentencing happened, the birthday is coming, and in 4 months, unless Jesse does something bad, unless Judge Culling does something remarkable, a clerk is going to close a file, and the last 18 months of that girl's life will stop existing in the eyes of the law. 15 minutes, that's how long the teenage girl was given to process the end of her own case. 15 minutes to understand that no contest meant no admission. To understand that youthful offender meant no prison. To understand that an August birthday she will never be invited to meant the person who allegedly nearly killed her would walk out of that courtroom, not as a defendant, not as a convict, not as an anything, but as a teenager in the state of Oklahoma. A boy that was being a boy has decided by operation of calendar was never accused of any of it. Goes away. Her mother was sobbing and begging months earlier. It didn't matter. Her attorney was kept outside the wall. It didn't matter. A tribal victim services advocate didn't know what was about to happen. It didn't matter. The other girl's mother came to court and couldn't even testify about her own daughter. It didn't matter. Because on a Tuesday in August, in roughly 120 days, the only thing that will matter is a clerk, a file, and a birthday. And the boy that a sobbing mother begged a prosecutor not to set free is going to blow out the candles. Jesse Butler is his name. If the law won't deal with it, well, maybe the people of Oklahoma will. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. I'm not encouraging anything bad to happen. I'm just saying it might be a little awkward walking around the Piggly Wiggly to the Kroger or whatever the hell you got there. Might be a little awkward. You might get some stares, Jesse. You might get more than that, honestly. I mean, what's on video is pretty bad. So let's just say what you did. We have to go in the details, but what you did. That's the kind of stuff that makes people, parents, fathers, mothers, rather enraged. Makes them do things that maybe they can't take back. Things that maybe they're willing to go to prison for quite some time. That's the reality in the world that you will now live in for the rest of your life. Changing your name and getting out of Stillwater might be in your best interest. But let us know when you do so we can identify you wherever you go on God's green earth and continue to warn everyone around you. And if you don't, we'll just find you and continue to warn people about you and continue to share your story at least once a year. In perpetuity. That's our gift to you. Again, just reminding people who you are, where you are, and what you did, even if the record disappears. In a courtroom. It never disappears out here. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. We'd love to hear it. We'd love to see it. Press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.